Welcome to the Quotivation Podcast. Together, we will unlock inspiration one quote at a time. Your host is one of America's top emerging public speakers. He is a former semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking and is an expert motivator. Please welcome Jody Powell.
Welcome to another episode of the Quotivation Podcast, where we unlock inspiration one quote at a time. And I hope you've had an amazing weekend and you are ready to move ahead and win your week this week and every week. String some of those wins together so that you can achieve your goals and reach your dreams. You know, I had the pleasure this morning of spending some time over coffee with an old friend, someone who I look up to and admire in terms of leadership. He was indirectly my first boss. I wasn't high enough on the totem pole quite yet in my first job to report directly to him, but he was over our department and showed me what it meant to be a real leader. This was a man who understood emotional intelligence, who understood being able to empathize and to relate and to talk to and to make everyone from the snotty little kid that just came out of college sitting in the cube to the highest level of executives. He made everyone feel important, valued. And he used the abilities that we had to enhance the business. Just an incredible leader. And so I had the opportunity to sit down with him this morning, have a cup of coffee, catch up on old times, and just soak in some of that sage advice. And so I hope for you this week that you can find someone, that you have someone in your life that you can take time, sit down with them, have a cup of coffee, go to dinner, meet them in a park somewhere tranquil and quiet, that you can just sit and absorb wisdom. You can sit and absorb knowledge. You can sit and absorb advice. And you can come out of that feeling inspired and motivated to be better. Because no matter how good we are, we can always be better. And I want to thank Jerry for making me feel like I can be better, because we had a cup of coffee this morning. And so I want you to feel better. I want you to win your week. So let's get to it. Let's start this episode like we do with every episode of the Quotivation Podcast by taking a shot of motivation. And this week, our shot of motivation is sponsored by Amy Real from Cross Country Mortgage. Amy is the real deal in all things mortgage. And she's been a dear friend and she has been a big fan of the Quotivation Podcast. And so if you are in need of anything mortgage related, first mortgage, second mortgage, refinance, maybe a mortgage on an investment property, you need to finance some type of mortgage in some type of way, you need to give Amy a call today. She's with Cross Country Mortgage and her phone number is 864-310-9337. That's 864-310-9337. You can email her at amy.real, R-E-I-H-L, at ccm.com. I'm going to tell you why you want to reach out to Amy, because Amy Real is the real deal in all things mortgage. And her NMLS number is 486-620. Reach out to Amy today and tell her you were quotivated to get your mortgage deal done. All right, let's get to it. Let's take a shot of motivation.
It's time for a shot of motivation, where the vibe's like taking a shot, but the high is pure inspiration. This is a quick, powerful boost of motivation to fire up your spirit. Get ready for a rapid infusion of uplifting stories, impactful quotes, and game-changing ideas. It's the swift, potent dose you need to amp up your game and win your week. It's a shot of motivation.
How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of being an idle grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely as men strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with a breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death. Such an expression of love from Elizabeth Barrett Browning's sonnet. Many believe this sonnet was an expression of love for her soon-to-be husband, Robert Browning, one that was intended to be just between the two of them. But it was published later in a collection of her works in 1850. I love the adverbs that are used here to describe how she loves. She loves freely, purely, passionately. We all deserve to be loved like this. So why can't we? Oh, I haven't found the right guy or the right girl. Oh, you know, romanticism is dead. No one loves like this anymore. I doubt I'll ever find love like this. I just want to find someone I'm compatible with. Well, I would argue that every one of us, every single one of us can be loved this passionately, this freely, this purely, because this is how every single one of us should love ourselves. We're so quick to give love, many times and in many situations where the other person may not deserve to be loved as we love, at least not by us. But how can we identify who to love and how to love if we have no idea how to passionately and completely love ourselves? Now, I know some of you may be thinking, oh, here we go. This self-love, touchy-feely, emotional mumbo-jumbo. You're just a softie. You're this motivational speaker that wants us to all feel good about how we view ourselves to give us the illusion that we're motivated. Listen, I've heard all of that before. And every single objection, every single dismissive comment comes from a place that you need to address, because it is the thing that is preventing you from being truly happy in life, truly satisfied with your circumstances. This dismissive attitude towards love, whether it's love for yourself or love for your fellow man, is the very poison that is causing the divisiveness, the hate-filled bully culture that's infesting our society. See, we all want to be elevated. We all want to be seen as a winner, someone with authority, someone who should be heard. And the fact that we all have a platform now through the little tiny keys on the keyboard of our phones invites us to share what we think will elevate us in the eyes of those who are watching. And like most platforms, some people choose to use them for good and some don't. But all of us want to be heard. Okay? We're listening. What is your message? See, if we can't find a way in our hearts to figure out how to love ourselves instead of loathe ourselves, we will never find a way to truly love another. Now, immediately, the defensive response is going to be, oh, I don't loathe myself, so this really doesn't apply to me. Well, I hope and I pray that that's true for you. However, it's my contention that many of us, a large percentage of us, participate daily in self-loathing behaviors. And here's a few. See, social psychologists propose that people evaluate themselves by comparing themselves to others. In today's world, where social media provides constant opportunities for these comparisons, people may frequently find themselves lacking in comparison to others, leading to feelings of inadequacy and self-loathing, particularly because what is seen on social media is not always an accurate depiction of what's really going on. Many of us live our best Facebook lives online. The pictures of the family vacation where your spouse is lovingly looking into your eyes, or the kids are all smiling, you're all hugging, and you're dressed in all the same colored clothes, and you look like you are just the perfect family. What was going on before the camera clicked the button? What's really happening? See, this need, this desire to elevate ourselves and our family creeps into social media, and suddenly we're posting things and we're saying things and we're building this image that is not a reflection of reality. Now, the problem with that is when we begin to go to social media and we start looking at all of this and we start comparing what's going on in our home, why can't our family be like that? Why can't we go on those vacations? Why can't our kids smile and hug and hold hands and love each other the way those brothers and sisters do? Without knowing what's actually happening on a day-to-day basis, it creates an unrealistic expectation that we try to live up to. And when we can't, we feel inadequate and we begin to loathe ourselves. Here's another one. Cultural and societal norms, expectations, and standards can also play a significant role in shaping a person's self-perception. For example, unrealistic beauty standards perpetuated by media can lead to body dissatisfaction and self-loathing, particularly among young people, but not just limited to young people. So I'm going to tell a story here, and it's probably going to get me in trouble, but I'm going to tell it anyway. My wife is a health nut. She loves to work out, and she's fallen in love with weight training. And I'm going to tell you something. She is a beast. She's muscular. She's fit. She's healthy. She's also almost 53 years old. Now, the other day, she shows me a picture of a girl she follows on Instagram who has shaped her legs into this very muscular physique. And my wife says, I want her legs. Well, first of all, my wife has amazing legs. Okay. She really does. She's worked hard. She's done the squats. She's done the machines. She's done all of the things that she needs to do to have really muscular, amazing legs. And she's achieved that. Second of all, I looked at the profile of the girl in the picture that she was comparing herself to. The girl was 23 years old, 30 years her junior, younger than our oldest son. Now, that's not to say that my wife couldn't have the legs of a 23-year-old. I actually think she does. But it is to say that my wife put herself into a completely unfair comparison situation that can lead to negative self-perception, self-loathing. Here's another one for you. Individuals who have experienced trauma, abuse, neglect, or other adverse life events may develop negative self-perceptions as a result. Additionally, certain mental health disorders, such as depression and anxiety, can distort one's self-perception and lead them to self-loathing. Mental illness has a stigma. No one wants to believe that they have a mental illness. However, the National Institute of Mental Health estimates that 1 in 5, or 20% of Americans, suffered from some form of mental illness in the last year. Doesn't sound like a lot? Well, let me put it to you this way. There are approximately 331 million people in the United States. That means 66.2 million people suffered from some form of mental illness last year. That is a lot. Now, what about trauma? Well, the same institute estimates that 61% of men and 51% of women reported experiencing a traumatic event in their life. Now, the important note here is reported, because as we all know, many of us suffer trauma in silence. However, of those reported, that means over 100 million men and 84 million women have experienced some form of trauma. which can lead to a negative self-perception, which can lead to self-loathing. Now, I say all of this to say that based on these statistics, my theory is this. I think it's safe to say that more of us experience self-loathing than self-loving. When we loathe, we're in a place where we don't feel good about who we are. And that response tends to be, well, let's tear others down to lift ourselves up. Now, I don't think this is necessarily a conscious decision or a conscious thought process. I think it's buried in our subconscious. It's been implanted there because it's been modeled for us in mainstream society. You want an example? Okay. I have one word for you. Politics. How do you get elected? Do you run on the issues? Do you propose solutions to move us forward, to better the situations that we're in? No. You tell everyone why they should not vote for the person running against you. You tear them down. You're voting for this person? Are you an idiot? What is the matter with you? I am voting for that person, and you're an idiot because you're not. Suddenly, we're put in a position to where, in order to elevate and to make ourselves feel better about the stance that we take, we have to put someone else down. We have to tear them down. That's the poison. That is the plague. So how do we fix this epidemic that's plaguing our society, our country, our world? Well, we've said this many times on this podcast, and guests have said this through their quotes and through the discussion of their quotes. One person cannot do it alone. I cannot change the world with one action, but one action can change the world. And what does that mean? It means that if I smile at a person on the street that has a frown on their face, I really haven't done anything to change the world. But if that person then smiles at someone else, and that person then smiles at someone else, and then that person smiles at someone else, and then that person smiles at someone else, suddenly the action has changed the lives of many. See, it takes all of us doing the things that invoke change in order to invoke change. The one act of loving yourself, the way Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote in the sonnet, can change the world, but only if many of us perform the action. How do I love thee? No. How do I love me? Let me count the ways. And that's your shot of motivation for this week. I hope you can take this and apply it in a way that's going to help you build others up around you while you love yourself and win your week. I want to thank Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage, for sponsoring this week's shot of motivation.
This has been a shot of motivation from America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. We hope it helps you win your week.
All right, let's get to our special guest today. Reverend Eva Venari, the founder of the Elevate Institute, is a spiritual alchemist who focuses on removing blocks to achieving longevity and healing chronic illness in prime of life professionals. She loves to witness the character development of a person who wants to be better. Please welcome to the Quotivation Podcast, Eva Venari. Eva, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jody?
Doing great. Doing great. Well, thanks for joining us today. I am truly looking forward to this conversation. I'm excited to get into the quote because it's one that I think is really powerful. But before we do that, Eva, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us what you do. Give us some insight into the world of Eva.
Yeah, I'm kind of an enigma as people get to know me. They go, and you do that, and you do that, and right. So it's an ever expanding being, and I feel like I've probably been here, you know, thousands of times, and I keep remembering a little bit more. But I seem to be this innate natural healer. I was a kid. I remember, you know, getting out the band-aids for anybody who cut their arm or something, you know, outside playing. And I've always wanted to heal. That's just been a part of me. And I found a way to take that, some ancient wisdom, today's technology, put it all together. And, you know, that's the alchemy part.
It's very cool. Talk to me a little bit about it. So when you say heal, because that can mean different things to different people, right? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to heal a person? What does that involve?
Everything. So the true holistic nature of healing involves your physical body down all the way to the DNA, how your brain works, and the judgments that we place on those thoughts bring us to the emotional state, right? All of that. And then you have a spiritual being and then multidimensional aspects of all of that. So yes, and to all of that. It's a lot of homework. That's what I'm saying. It's like an enigma. The things that I have studied, the certifications that I had, you can't go to one college and get that. The combination of things that I'm putting together, maybe somebody else is doing, but I don't know. I haven't found them yet.
How much of this involves technology? How much of it involves kind of the holistic side? How much of it involves mindset? What's kind of the formula there in terms of, you know, X percent of this and Y percent of that?
I kind of have a doorway through which many people recognize I want help. Mm-hmm. And very few people are like me who found a portion of this work, called up a practitioner the next day and said, hey, I'm your next client. How do I get started? I did that. I have yet to find another who's done that. So there's that.
Yeah.
I recognize what I wanted, but many people, they often are thinking mostly of the thing, whatever that is in their red hot minute right now. I'm frustrated. I'm concerned. I don't know about, I feel like I'm not getting the answers for, and that could be a symptom on the body or waking up one day and realizing, oh my God, I am actually getting sleep wrong. How did I do that? And I got a kink over here, but it really turns out to be something spiritual, but they don't know. But oftentimes when I give people an opportunity to speak and be heard, and I listen to what's going on with them, what they are concentrating on mostly is what's giving them pain, and they want relief from that pain. So we're talking about chronic illness, and that's the doorway through which everyone kind of goes through, because we can't go anywhere without our body.
Right. Kind of important.
So I start there. Get the body functioning at a more ideal state. And then we notice what the body wants to do next. Would they want to release traumas? Do we want to talk about relationships? Because when you stop hurting so much and thinking about what's going on with your body, you can now have the emotional space and time and clarity to go, oh, I have people in my life. I should probably talk to them. And oftentimes we're out of practice with that, and we create more drama and stress and trauma than we intend to. And so there needs to be a guidance around that. And that's what I'm doing.
So is there more of a step by step? So you start with the body, then you kind of move to the mental, to the emotional, to the spiritual, or is there just kind of this, well, it just kind of depends on what's going on with the person.
It depends. And that's why I offer that time to sit down. Let me listen to what's going on. Tell me more. Mm-hmm. And then when you think you're done, I'm going to go, and what else? And then you're going to remember, oh yeah, there's this too. So sometimes people come to me like, Eva, I think I'm cursed. Great. Tell me what's going on in your life. And so they'll tell me, and ultimately I'll say, well, I think possibly you just have something going on with your immune system. Why don't we fix that? And
that can feel like a curse, by the way. The immune system, sure, yeah. Autoimmune issues can feel like the curse, the worst curse in the world.
It does. But at the same time, because I'm a spiritual person, I can actually tune into a person and see if they have a curse, a hex, a spell, a demonic possession. And there are those. Many people have them, especially if you're going on ayahuasca journeys. You got them.
So we're talking more, not just physical health, not just mental health, but tell me more about the spiritual health side of it, because it's not something that's common, and it's not something that a lot of people say, huh, you know, I think I need to check my chakras here, or, you know, I need to get this demon out of my gut.
Well, a demon can be something that you are self-sabotaging yourself. So relationships. So if you find yourself dating the same kind of person and ending in the same result over and over again, maybe you're self-sabotaging. Some people see that as a demon. So this is really interesting. We don't connect the two very commonly. People who go to church, they are aware of the exorcism rites and rituals. And it is not exclusive to Christianity, by the way. It is in every single religion. And that's where it fascinates me. Okay, we as a human condition, the human condition creates such an environment where we become vulnerable. This is what I want to bring to a person's awareness and empower them so that they retain their sovereignty. And that's the most important thing, because we're here to have a life of free will. And I don't mean to run amok. I mean we have a contract that we want to complete. Some people call that purpose. We're here to do something in life. We're here to serve each other in the smallest and largest of ways. Some of us are on stages and some of us are in the kitchen. It does not matter. We all have something to give. And I think the faster that we recognize that, the kinder we can be as a community and the more we can do together.
So what are the things that, as just a patient or a person coming to you looking for help, what are some typical things that you hear over and over again that could be red flags for people that are going, huh, I wonder if I need to like check on what's going on with me. What are those symptoms? Are there common ones, or are they, or does it just depend on the person?
Common ones, 95% of the people that I test, that it's a physical sample of the body that I take and I test that, that's the science, reveal a copper toxicity, and it will look something like chronic fatigue, anxiety, insomnia, depression, fibromyalgia, itchy skin, heart palpitations, short-term memory loss, hypothyroidism, arthritis. Guess what? They're all related. And that's not the end of it. The chronicness of it, the degradation of joints, the I go upstairs now and my knees make these weird noises. Why is that happening? I'm losing my eyesight at 40 and people going, oh, that's normal. I'm 50 and I can read the Made in China on the sign across the room. You can too. At any age, you can have health. So that's something to recall. What you think is normal for your age isn't normal. It's just common.
That's a very good distinction. I love that you said that. It's not normal. It's just common. And we tend to accept the common as normal.
Yes.
And that could be detrimental in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah, we're comparing ourselves to others and then not taking into account how the others got there. Because we're not all born equally when it comes to our physical body, whatever imbalances and toxins your mother was exposed to while she was creating you. Guess what? You are a carbon copy. I have done these tests of multi-generational families. Usually it follows the mother line, and it's not genetics. I hear people, oh, Eva, you don't understand. It's genetic. We all have diabetes. Diabetes is an environmental congenital issue. It is not genetic.
Wow.
You're talking about diabetes one, but type two is totally reversible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what are the things you mentioned earlier that we kind of make ourselves vulnerable, or we open ourselves up to things that can hurt us, that can invade our body, that can, you know, the toxicity for one, you know, the things that are just toxic in our environment, just walking outside. Like if you really thought about it, you'd stay inside and just breathe through an air purifier for the rest of your life. Right.
Well,
That may be a little extreme, but what are some things that we're doing that are really opening ourselves up to, hey, this probably isn't such a good idea for you health-wise?
Yeah. Well, I want to preface all of that with our body is designed perfectly in order to overcome these things. We just have to give the body what it needs so that it can overcome and heal. So we are exposed to the most amount of toxins as a human race on planet Earth now than ever before, including all of the electrical, the EMS, the Wi-Fi's, the, you know, from our cell phone to at the actual input of what are we reading, the emotional space of what are we putting our time and attention on. Those things are cumulative in addition to the what you eat, what you drink, if you get rest, if you have slowed down your body enough to get a good night's sleep. All of these things matter. And the food itself is no longer, since the chemical revolution, we have known this, we have studied it, look it up. The nutrient density of food is not what it was. So grandparents, people are like, oh, I just eat food and I'm fine. Not enough anymore. You have to supplement. And it's no longer a question of if, it's how much and what kind. And that's the important part. Everybody's unique.
And everybody's unique. So there's not a, everyone should supplement with X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
It's all about what we are personally exposed to, what we go through, the emotional state, the nutrition, the genetics that is, that does play a part of it, just in it rears its head. So how do we, you know, if I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh, this feels like a lot, how do we wrap our head around this to say, here's what I got to do?
Well, I've wrapped my head around it, so you don't have to. And the conversation between us can be as simple as, all right, it sounds to me like we need to get your body in order first so that we can open up that, those pathways of thought, give you more energy so you can wrap your head around what's next. You know, we're not supposed to all be the priests. Some of us, most of us are supposed to be the ones that go to church, right? That's the attendees.
Right.
And that's what I'm here for. I'm the person in front going, all right, I can see the bigger picture. I can see what's going on with you. I've been where you are. I know how to get to where you are, to where I am. Do you want the way? And it's not always just a prayer. It's usually a lot more than that.
Hmm. So what are the things that, if you could change anything that, and I know this is such a blanket statement for something that's very unique to every individual, but if there's just one thing out there that is just plaguing us, not just Americans, but just us,
everybody,
everyone, what is the thing that we should all pay attention to and either stop doing or start doing?
Yeah. The reverse of what I call essential love, which is love for self. The scourge on society is codependence and not understanding boundaries, not understanding what our terms are for life, what they're willing to accept and what they consider to be sacrificial that somehow is supposed to earn them a gold star in heaven one day. There is no gold star. This is meant to be a life lived in the service that you're supposed to bring in your gifts. And if you don't bring in your gift, you're denying the rest of us. And you can't do that when you're living a sacrificial lamb of a life. So the codependence around that, but Susie says I'm supposed to do this. Who's Susie to you? And is she the one that signed your contract with God? I'm pretty sure it wasn't her. So but get your nose out of other people's business. That's a big one. Codependency, all the way down the line of boundaries and self-love. And I'm not talking about selfishness where you're a narcissist. I'm talking about truly putting yourself first so that you can. Think about the airplane. Put the mask on first and then help your neighbor. That's it.
Sorry, I was getting getting a Facebook message call. That has never happened to me before. Huh. totally lost track of thought there. Yeah. So I was thinking there was going to be no editing, but there will be a little bit of editing going on.
There'll be.
yeah, there will now. Or we'll just leave it in there. That'd be okay too. I mean, yeah, this way it goes. So, so codependency in terms of just... really at the sacrifice of self-awareness, self-love, self-discovery, are there things that you would recommend people do in order to really take that inward perspective, to take a look at what's inside, to take a look at the gifts, to take a look at the personality types, whatever it is, to discover what am I really here for? What am I really good at? And how can I give back?
Yeah, it starts with curiosity, right? It's these questions that you just asked, turn them inward and ask yourself, why am I here? It's not that you need to discover what am I supposed to do for the rest of my life to make money at and live. Like the Americans as a public, as a group of people, we are so obsessed with what do we do for work? It's more like you wouldn't think of it as work if you were bringing in your gift because it wouldn't feel like work, right? It would feel like you, what's natural, and this is the work that I'm doing. It's like it just feels like naturally what I'm supposed to be doing. And once you receive that message, and for me, from spirit, it was a tap on the shoulder after my ex-husband passed away at the age of 45. He was on 17 medications, and That's just insane. Yeah. Why is anyone 17 medications at the age of 45? And he died of a massive heart attack, could not be revived. So he wasn't there for our kids. And this kind of thing people are unaware of. They just think that they give away their complete power to whomever has, you know, authority over them or a perceived authority. And rather than being the advocate for themselves and saying, do I have this medication? They go, well, a doctor told me I need to take it, so I must take it. Do you? You know, be willing to ask those questions, not for the sake of being a pain to your doctor, but to really having now creating an equal partnership and communication. This is your body. It's the only one you're getting. You're not going to get a new one issued to you at 50. So defend it.
Wait, what? I turned 50 in a few months. I'm not getting it. What? No one told me that.
No, I just turned 50 this year, so I know.
Well, I need one. I'm sure there are a lot of us in this boat that are turning something that we really are shocked midlife, that we're turning. Yeah. What happened? Dang it. I know. I'm sure there are a lot of us though that could benefit from some improvement to not only the physical body, but the spiritual body, the emotional, mental health side. I know you mentioned earlier going up the steps. My office is upstairs. I came up here to hop on this podcast to do this recording. I had to wait a couple of minutes because I was breathing so hard. Like, what happened? What is that? Come on. Mix a salad in or something, pal. Come on. But there are a lot of us that, and you know, not it's, it's more Americans. I mean, let's face it. We have a food issue in America. We have an obesity problem in America. But I think every culture is facing the thing that is impacting a lot of people, that is shortening lives, that is causing pharmaceutical companies to make billions of dollars. And there just needs to be a kind of an awakening. An awakening to the fact that it shouldn't be this way, and an awakening to the fact that that all of this is connected, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. It's all indwelt within us, and so therefore it's all connected, and so that just tends to make sense. Eva, so if I were interested in furthering a conversation with you and having some one-on-one time with Eva, how do I get in touch with Eva? What's the best way for our audience to reach out to you and to say, hey, I want to figure all this out?
Yeah, have a conversation with me. So go to the website. It's theelevateinstitute.com. And you'll see on the bottom of almost all the pages and sometimes at the top, this is start here calendar. Get on a call, 30 minutes. It's free. And I'll listen. I'm going to listen to you for about 15 minutes and ask you what else is going on until you're empty. And from that, I'll gauge, all right, what are your goals? What is it that you're wanting to achieve? And then put that together to create a solution. So sometimes there's questions you have where the answer begs two more questions. Go through all of those. And then I answer questions that you haven't asked that I know you need to know about. And if I can't help, or if it looks like the work that I offer isn't quite a right fit for your personality, because if you work it, it works. But if it's not a right fit for you, I'll make a recommendation if I know someone.
Yeah, that's great. And that is theelevateinstitute.com. I will put all of the contact information in the episode notes so that everyone has access to that and can reach out to Eva when you decide that, hey, all of this is connected and I need to figure it all out. And I need to stop going to this person for this and that person for that and that person for this. Eva is your one-stop shop and she's going to help you figure all of that out. And so we'll put that into the episode notes. So Eva, I love the quote that you sent to me because it really speaks to what you do. It speaks to the conversation that we've already had. So tell us what the quote is, who said it, and why is this quote so powerful for you?
Love this quote. A lot of people know it. Until we make the unconscious conscious, it will rule us and we will call it fate. And that's Carl Jung. And the importance of that is, reminds me of the game called Wolf. You heard of this game?
I don't think I have.
So it's a card game you play in a party. And the idea is, if you know who your enemy is, you're likely to beat him. But if you don't, you're basically set to be a victim. And I think for the most part, we have lost touch with what's really out there that can harm us. And if we can illuminate, figure out where things are coming from, educate ourselves and be in a more empowerment as opposed to thinking like we were taught how to think, but to really think differently for ourselves, really get in touch with who we are. That's the unconscious. If you can connect your unconscious and bring it forward, now you have a greater fighting chance.
What's the one way to do that? Like, how do we, is this through meditation? Is this through therapy? Is it yes to all of the above? How do we tap into those unconscious thoughts, feelings, behaviors, habits that are ruling our lives and we don't even know it?
Yeah. Look for the patterns. So if you keep a diary, oftentimes you go, the reason why you're supposed to keep a diary is not to just dump your brain out on the paper. It's make it legible so you can go back and see, oh my God, I forgot. I did have that same experience. And look at that. I met this person. And it looks like the same thing is happening every single time I get into a relationship. Or every time I go to the doctor, I end up with this problem. Oh, that problem is still here. I've had it for a long time. Whatever that is, see your patterns. That's number one. Number two is follow your intuition. People go, oh, Eva, I'm not spiritual. Every human being has an intuitive channel already open. It's just which one is it is yours. And if you want help identifying that, we'll figure that out. But, you know, for every five of the senses that we have physically in our, and most of us have active, we have the same exact reflected in the spiritual senses. And so some people have that, oh, I just knew that was going to happen. Claircognizance, right? Mm-hmm. Some people hear spirit, like their audience. Some people have vision ability, their voyance. Whichever one is yours, you're receiving messages from your higher self, from spirit, from angels, from your spirit team. You're receiving them. Every time you pray, you're getting an answer, probably in your dreams. Pay attention to your dreams. If you wake up somewhere between 3 to 5 o'clock in the morning and like, oh man, I have to now go pee. Your body didn't wake up to do that. Your body's waking up to say, hey, you just had a dream. You need to pay attention to that. That's a message from God or from your spirit team. You need to pay attention and really meditate on that. So you have options. You have many ways to do this. Those are the most forward I can think of, but it's about what's coming to you. And then your job is to interpret and apply it.
What are the things in our unconscious that are ruling us, that are putting those blockers up, and what are they, how do they manifest in our everyday life?
Oftentimes we're blocked by fear, shame. Mm. Usually other people put shame on us, but we are really good at picking up what others put down for us and repeating it. You ever heard of the mother wound or daddy issues? Like these are things that manifest when we have shame or guilt placed on us. And that is a result oftentimes of something, a traumatic event in our life that has removed our direct connection with source God energy. Mm. And fear will put us completely outside of anything intuitive. Completely. So do not make any decisions or moves as long as you're in fear. Get rid of the fear, analyze it, get rid of the tolerations that are allowing for it, and be honest about it. All right, I've done the fear. Get out of codependency. I say it like it's so easy to do.
Well, you were reading my mind. My next question was, how do we do that? How do I become unafraid?
Yeah, this is what I coach you through when it comes to the essential love. And getting to the next level and ascension, and we have to take our bodies with us, and that means clearing the mind and getting our love right. So that's why it's essential.
And then when we bring these thoughts, these feelings, these habits, these things that are in our unconscious, if we're successful in bringing them to our conscious state, what do we do with them?
Implement. Find a way to be of service to your fellow man, even if you are not building a business like I am. I'm in service on a grand scale to be able to get people into this aligned state. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is meant to do that, but that's my work. And I know that. So yeah, it's everybody's path is this winding road. It's not a straight line. Right. And we have to discover it. That's part of the journey of being human.
I think it's interesting too, because I love the kind of the distinction that you're making there, that you can discover what you're intended to do here in terms of service. And that may not necessarily be your job. That may not be your career. That may not be something that you get paid for, but it absolutely is something that you should focus on and do and implement. Once you bring that to the consciousness, you implement those things, because, you know, a job is important, right? I mean, it's part of our society. It's part of how we've structured the way we are choosing to exist, right? But I think what you're meant to do becomes so much bigger and so much more important than that thing that you do for, quite frankly, half your adult life, because it's what you were built for. It's what you were intended to do. And it's so satisfying and so gratifying to discover it, but it's even more so when you implement it and you see the effects of it. And I don't think a lot of people are there. I think they're stuck in that. It must be great, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And I'm frustrated and I don't want to figure it out because I'm tired of trying.
Yeah. The frustration is a sign that you have something to discover.
Mm. Yeah. Ooh, really? So tell me more. I love that thought. Cause a lot of times I feel like I'm frustrated because I have a short fuse or I have a short temper or someone's just an idiot.
Judgment.
Why can't people be as smart as me? But tell me more about that thought, that frustration is a sign to really seek more and to delve deeper to self-discovery.
Yeah, I'll just put it into like a metaphor, and I love metaphors. So if you were coming into a room and you're like, I know I left this blank, whatever it is, my keys and or my glasses in this room, but the room's light is not turning on. You only have the hallway light and it's coming in, it's kind of filtering and you can only see part of the room. If you walk in too far, you're likely to stub your toe, break something, knock something over, reach in the dark and hope that you meet the right thing. But if you're able to know where the light switch is, turn it on. Now you can see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference is now. Okay. So that just means it's a GPS guidance to say, I don't have enough illumination. I don't have enough light. I don't have enough information, really, because you're living in a space that is much smaller than the actual room that you have to play with.
Interesting. And then the light switch then in this scenario is just, that's bringing it into your consciousness. That's kind of turning on the light and discovering, oh, hey, yeah, there is something here that I absolutely can or should do. And not only is that, I love how this metaphor is working out, because not only does that illuminate the room for you, someone else that comes into the room with you, it illuminates it for them. And so all of a sudden, this thing that you discover that you're sharing with the world, suddenly you're able to kind of let your light shine. I love that. That's a very interesting thought. Eva, so as we're about to wrap up here, I want to take time and I want to ask the question, because I love for my audience to win their week. That's my thing. I want you to win your week, whatever that looks like for you, whatever goal you're trying to get to, whatever dream you're trying to chase, you need to do something that's a little bit more, a little bit above and beyond this week in order to move you that much closer. How do you win your week? You win a couple of moments, you put those together, you win a day. You win a couple of days, you've won your week, and you've moved yourself that much forward. So, considering the quote, how can someone implement this into their daily life in order to help them win their week and move themselves that much closer to their goal?
Yeah, I think it's about transparency and learning to trust our fellow man again. And this is going to be practice. Instead of being guarded, when you have that frustration, especially when it involves other people, and I can't tell you when it doesn't.
It seems to always involve other people.
Practice your way into tactfully and kindly bringing the problem to the person. Because if you can't find the solution by yourself, it means you're meant to find it with the other.
So instead of frustration and lashing out, it's collaboration. It's bringing someone in to really help one another discover whatever it is that you're or discover where the light switch is in the room, to stick with the metaphor.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes we need someone else to, you know, move it out of the way, or they know where it is, but we don't. Hmm. And oftentimes I find that we place problems in, or we receive a problem or a perceived problem, and we think we have to have these complete and full solution in order to come to the other person. And I find this true in relationshiping a lot. Oh, you got that problem? Oh, I haven't figured out the solution yet. That's why I haven't talked to you yet. Great. Plop in what's going on in your mind so I can play with it too. Like, this needs to be a collaborative effort. Mm. Always, 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 always.
Isn't it interesting how we always like to just kind of put a wall around everything that we're doing and everything we're kind of wanting to do, because we feel like we have to do it and have to have it complete in order for it to be shared with anyone else. And then when we share it with someone else and we think it's complete, they add so much more to it. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, I wish I would have done this weeks ago.
Right? Yeah. Well, and you think about all of the stress that then gets relieved in the body. You've been living with that cortisol dump throughout your body, keeping you up at night, stressing you out. Do you know that ages you a lot? Let's not prematurely age. We want to stay on planet.
Aging has happened fast enough as it is.
Yes.
Well, Ava, I appreciate this quote. Until we make the unconscious conscious, it will rule us and we will call it fate. Carl Jung, fascinating quote, wonderful thoughts. And, you know, I want to reiterate, if you want to get in touch with Ava, info@theelevateinstitute.com is the email address. Theelevateinstitute.com. I'm on the website now and I'm scrolling. Oh, look, there it is. Start here. And it's a simple click to schedule 30 minutes of free time with Ava and to really talk through, walk through, ask the questions, answer the questions of how we connect body, mind, soul, spirit. And I think it's just fascinating. Eva, I want to thank you for being on. This has been a wonderful conversation. And the work you do, it truly, from beginning to end, is so needed in the world right now. I mean, when I think about some of the things that my family has been through and that I've been through medically, how many different people we're sent to, oh, well, I don't do this. I've got a colleague that does this. And oh, by the way, I'll get you an appointment. It's 6 weeks out. And you know, it's just so frustrating and so aggravating and can really lead to emotional distress and make things so much worse. So to just imagine being able to come in and look at mind, body, soul, spirit, all in one shot and realize how they're connected and understand how one plays into the other, I think is fascinating. I think the work that you do is amazing. Thank you for being on today. And thank you for sharing all of this information with us so that we can win our week.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Eva Venari, founder of the Elevate Institute. And if you want more information, if you want to schedule time with Eva, and I highly, highly recommend that you do, go to www.theelevateinstitute.com. There is a handy dandy little button right on the website that says start here. That takes you to a scheduling application that would allow you to schedule some time to talk with Eva. You can also reach out to Eva via email, info@theelevateinstitute.com, and their health hotline. The phone number, area code 408-800-7353. But go to their website. All of their contact information is there. Their services, articles about them, links to their social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. Go check Eva out today. And I want to thank Eva for being on the Quotivation Podcast with a powerful quote from Carl Jung about the conscious and the subconscious and how we need to look inwardly to discover the things that are there that we didn't realize were there. What an interesting concept. And hey, speaking of things that are there, we are at the time for a little bit of dessert. Won't you stick around for the last slice of cheesecake?
How about some dessert before you go? there isn't anything that can't be solved over a slice of cheesecake. So before we wrap things up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the last slice of cheesecake.
What a great conversation with Eva Venari of the Elevate Institute. So many things I want to pick apart and talk further about and dig into, but there were two things that Eva said that really caught my attention. First, she said, this is like the airplane model, where you put your own mask on before you reach to help someone else with their mask. And so if you've flown before, and if you fly frequently, then you probably have glazed over the safety information that's given at the very beginning of the flight, whether it's through video or the actual flight attendants giving you that information over the intercom. It's easy to tune that out, to not pay attention to it. But one part of that those safety instructions is that in the event that the cabin loses pressure and you as a passenger will need oxygen, oxygen masks will drop down from above. And the instructions are to secure the mask over your face, over your mouth and nose, before you reach to help someone else. It's interesting because our instinct for most of us is to make sure those around us, particularly if those around us are people that we care for, that are part of our family, that are part of our group, we want to make sure that they're taken care of. We want to make sure that they're protected. And a lot of times we do that at the expense of ourselves. But in this case, the safety warning is to secure your own mask before you reach to help those who need help with their mask. And Eva was saying that this is very true about not only your health, not only your physical health, but your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, that we must first look inward. We must understand, coming out of the quote from Carl Jung, that the conscious and the subconscious work together, and we must recognize what's in the subconscious. We must understand what's there in order for us to be able to move forward without the subconscious ruling us. The quote itself says, until we make the unconscious conscious, it will rule us and we will call it fate. So those things that you have to look inwardly, why am I wired this way? Why do I do the things that I do? Why do I feel the things I feel? Why do I say the things that I say? Why are my reactions my reactions? A lot of those things are in the unconscious or the subconscious, and we have to bring those to light so that we can understand them, so that we can shape them, so that we can own them, so that we can respond the way that we want to, as opposed to the way we're sort of programmed to. And so before we can reach out and help anyone else with anything that they're going through, we must first look inward and we must secure our own mask over our mouth and nose before we reach to help those who are also in need. And all this really is a call for is an attention to yourself. Take care of yourself. Take care of your mental health. Take care of your physical health, your spiritual health, all of which interact and work together. They're so important. And then as Eva went on to explain this quote from Carl Jung, she talked about leaving a pair of glasses in a room. And you open the door and the room is dark. And the only light you have coming into the room is the room from the hallway. And it just barely gives a low glow and lights just a portion of the room. And as you walk further into the room, you realize that you can't see. You don't know what's there. You're liable to stub your toe. You're liable to knock something off and break it. You're not likely to find your glasses until you turn on the light switch, until you let the light in. So it's another metaphor of saying we need to understand what's there within us, within our hearts, within our minds that are hidden in those dark places, those dark rooms, those things that we've locked away. We need to open those doors and we need to turn on those lights and see what's there. Hiding things away like that never accomplishes anything. So this is a call for us to self-reflect, to dig into our subconscious, to dig into our hearts and into our minds and understand ourselves so that we can better love ourselves, so that we can then begin to reach out and help those that are around us. So as you go through this week, I want you to think about, number one, how can you improve yourself? How can you look inward to find what makes you tick? How can you increase the self-love that you feel? And then number two, when you've gone on this journey, when you've explored your mind and your heart, and you found some things that maybe you don't like them being there, get rid of them. Detox from it. Get the toxicity out so that you can thrive. Because when we thrive is when we truly help those that are around us. And if we can help those that are around us, whether they're family, friends, even strangers, then we've won our week. And that's what I want for you this week. I want to thank Eva Venari for coming on the Quotivation Podcast. I want to thank Amy Real for being a loyal sponsor of the Shot of Motivation. And I want to thank you for listening. That's all the time we have on the Quotivation Podcast. Until next time, stay quotivated.
You have been listening to the Quotivation Podcast, hosted by America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. If you would like to book Jody to speak at your company, conference, or next event, visit www.jodypowellspeaks.com. You can also email him at Jody, that's J-O-D-Y, at jodypowellspeaks.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Quotivation Podcast. And remember, stay quotivated.